Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the Cembra Money Bank Full Year Results 2016 conference call and live webcast. I'm Selena, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Robert Oudmayer, CEO, Mr. Remy Schimmel, CFO, and Mr. Volker Gloe, CRO of Cembra Money Bank. Please go ahead, gentlemen.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, everyone. With the 2016 results of Cembra Money Bank, I'm here with Remy Schimmel, our new CFO, and Volker Gloe, our Chief Risk Officer. Just want to run you quickly through the first pages. Strong results in a challenging environment. In a challenging environment, you probably know stable interest rates at record lows and negative inflation. For our market, the consumer loan market, still very cautious customers. Loan market declining, it also had to do with the not only with the cautious behavior of customer, but also with the new interest rate cap, which was introduced on the 1st of July 2016, where we had, as you know, new max interest rate of 10 and 12%. And then also the domestic interchange fee was reduced already in 1st of August 15 from 95 basis points to 70 basis points. If you look at our business, very stable assets, so a decline in personal loans, but offset by a very strong credit cards growth and performance. Some pretty good things, I think, on the business development side. We talk about it a few pages about it, but Nomigro, Swiss Billing, FNAC, renewal of Conforama, so pretty good development there. We fully repaid GE, so we're completely now independently funded. And loss performance was very stable with 1.8%, 30+, and a non-performing loan ratio of 0.4%, with losses completely stable at 1.1%. Cost disciplined, as always, I would say, with a cost income ratio of 42.5%. So we're pretty proud that we could write very strong results, the second best results in history, with a net income of 143.7 million or 510 francs a share, EPS up 1%. Return on average equity 17.4, above market average, and delivering on midterm targets. Still very strongly capitalized, so the Tier 1 capital is 20%, resulting in excess capital of 76 million. We redefined a capital policy. We talk a bit more in the deck later, but now we are returning some excess capital. And then a total dividend of 4.45 per share proposed versus the 3.35 of 2015. So it includes a 1% extraordinary dividend, and I think we are at the top of banks on dividend here. If you look at the next page on the consumer finance market, personal loan market was a tough market in 2016. There was very aggressive competition due to the new pricing, so the rate cap was implemented with a 10% rate cap for personal loans and 12% for cards the 1st of July. And basically, competition started to apply low prices already much earlier than the 1st of July. We've been defending our market share. I think we did quite well with a lot of focus on direct business. So our direct business, we had to decrease prices to below 10% 1st of July. So we got more competitive on the direct business. We lost a bit on the agent side as we're not paying full commission to all agents anymore. We also took some cost measures. We closed 7 smaller branches. So we reduced our network from 25 to 18 branches. And I think we're starting to use more and more the combination cards and personal loan, where we increase flexibility for the customer. And if you move to the card side, really strong year again in cards. Credit cards up 11% to 727,000. Beginning market shares, the market was only up 3%. Cumulus MasterCard, again, rated best in class card in various surveys. I think there were 3 or 4, we were really number one again for the 3rd or 4th year in line. We renewed the Migros contract earlier than planned for 5 years. We also renewed the Conforama contract for 3 years. We introduced FNAC in November 2016, so I think a lot of momentum around the credit card side. If you look then at the auto side, very, very stable market share in the auto business. The car sales went down 2% after the great year in 2015. After we moved it back, new car sales went up steeply in 15. So 16 was better than expected because 370,000 is probably a bit better than the average of 300,000, what you've seen over the last 10 years. The used car market was growing about 2%, which is logical because that's an effect of the high sales in 2015. We maintained our pricing. There was a lot of pressure from captives to push sales again, but we maintained the pricing. So I think we had a very stable year in auto. We introduced a new system, new technology, and we still have the personal approach with that new technology as a value proposition for the more than 3,000 dealers that we are working with. A few words on payment technology. Twint and Payment joined forces, and they really pushing hard to get a lot of scale in the coming years, I think. Apple Pay was also introduced in the market, and we also expect Samsung Pay to be introduced in the market. We haven't changed our strategy a lot. We continue to be a smart follower. So basically, we work closely together with Migro, we will join the winning technology. On NFC, strong growth in NFC again. Chembra is the leader in NFC. We did 20% of the NFC transactions in 2016, so we are leading in NFC. Probably interesting to talk a bit about business development. First, about Swiss Billing. So we announced last week the acquisition of Swiss Billing. I think it's an interesting business. It's a small business with strong technology, but it enriches our offering to merchants and retailers. So we cannot only offer now cards or loans, we can also offer invoice financing, which is now has an increasing popularity in Switzerland. It also provides us access to credit-affine customers in a high-volume market. So those people, they don't pay at the end of the month or they don't pay immediately. They have a payment term, so they're probably somewhere credit-affine. You probably have some questions about Swiss Billing, but, you know, we can answer it afterwards. It will continue to operate under its own brand, and it will, you know, benefit from Chamber's strong financial position. I think the business was growing. We can give them funding, much more than what they have, so I think the combination is going to be interesting. We acquired 100% of the share capital, and we also maintained the two founding partners there because they are being building a very nice business there, and they are committed to stay on board together with us. Transaction is below 10 million, but we are quite happy to have completed this transaction last week. Another big thing was the Migro partnership. We early extended the contract until 2022. We're now 11 years with a successful partnership with Migro. I think one of the reasons to renew the contract early was to address the impact of the regulatory changes. So the domestic interchange is going to be 44 basis points as of 1st of August 2017. We expect to continue to grow there. I think we still have room to grow. And it's nice if you see the cards. Now, this is the fourth generation of cards, and we're going to launch the fifth generation. We haven't disclosed any details about the fifth generation. We're not going to disclose details today as well. That will be agreed with Migro. But there will be a mid-2017, the fifth generation of the Cumulus MasterCard. Also, life is flat. So only five branches, but with 200,000 members in Switzerland. Pretty loyal, good start. And now we have a couple of thousand applications already in the first months. It is not going to be a Migro, but it's, you know, you could compare it probably to a Conforama. We are very happy to have them on board as well. And then on the innovation side, we launched the mundane pay chip watch with NFC chip in the strap. It's a bit of a niche, but I think it's a nice innovation as well. With that, I'm handing over to Remy, who's going to talk about the P&L and the operating expenses and the balance sheet. Remy, please go ahead.
Thank you, Albert. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to present my first result as the new CFO of Sembra. In terms of sequence, I'm going first to cover the P&L, then provide a deep dive on the operating expenses, followed by an update on the balance sheet, and lastly, an update on the funding. Moving on to the P&L section, slide 6. Overall, 2016 net income was 143.7 million versus 145 in 2015, translating into a 5.10 EPS compared to a 504 EPS in 2015. Looking at the P&L line by line, total income was 394 million versus 388.7, which translated into 1.4% increase, mainly driven by lower interest income following the introductions of the rate cap in July 2016, which started to flow through the P&L in H2 as the personal loan portfolio reprices gradually. The overall reductions in net income was partly offset by lower interest expenses, lower cost of funds, as we took advantage of the low interest rate environment by one, repricing and replacing maturing instruments, and two, by fully repaying the GE facilities 2 years ahead of schedule. More detail will be provided on this on slide 9. Commission and fee income was up 11% at 96.3 million, driven by higher insurance fee income of 21.9 million due to higher profit share, higher credit card fees, as highlighted by Robert earlier, mainly driven by an increase in the number of credit cards of 11.4% year-on-year, which reached 727,000, by an increase in the average number of transactions per card, and by an increase in the average number of spend per account. We also introduced a purpose statement fee in our pricing waterfall ahead of the reductions in interchange scheduled for August 2017, as highlighted earlier by Robert. Provision for losses was 2% higher compared to 2015 at 44.6 million, translating into a stable 1.1% loss rate. But Volker will guide you through the details on slide 10. Operating expenses, which will be covered more extensively on the next slide, were higher compared to 2015, mainly driven by higher pension costs and higher depreciation costs following the successful separation of GE from GE at the end of 2015. In summary, and looking at the key ratios, net interest margin was 7.2% compared to 7.3% in 2015. Cost-income ratios was 42.5% in line with expectations and following the continued normalization of the cost base. Return on equity was 17.4% with a 3% return on assets. Moving on to the operating expenses on the next slide. Operating expenses were 167.5 million versus 161.5, which translated into a 4% increase, mainly driven by compensation and benefit were 1% higher at 100.4 million, driven by stable average FTEs and marginally lower staff costs, which were offset by one-off pension cost of 3 million following the reduction in the discount rate and the reduction in the expected return on assets. Professional services were 1.9 million lower at 9 million due to one-off separation project costs in 2015. Marketing costs were lower in 2016 following higher contribution from our partners, lower marketing funding costs, which were partially offset by higher marketing personal loan costs following the introductions of the red cap. Net collection costs were 1 million lower following the increase in fee passed on to customers, mainly fee for on-link payments at the post. The increase in variable postage and stationery cost of 0.9 million was driven by the increase in the number of card issues in 2016, mainly postage and procurement. Rental expense costs were 400K higher due to one-off provision following the decision to close both branches and satellite office in order to realign the overall distribution network. IT costs were 9.5 million higher following the separation with GE and following the normalizations of the cost as a standalone business, leading to there was a 5 million reclassification from transactional services agreement and professional services, and there was a 4.5 million IT investment to further digitalize the business and also to meet some new regulatory requirements. In terms of guidance, we now have a relatively normalized IT cost base on a BAU basis. Depreciation costs were 3.3 million higher following the successful execution of the separation project with GE. Here, and in terms of forward-looking guidance, we expect a run rate of circa 10 million per annum. Other costs were 2.5 million lower, driven by lower project costs. Excuse me. Moving on to the balance sheet. Overall, the balance sheet was just under 4.9 billion with a circa 100 million increase compared to 2015. On the asset side, the cash balance increased to 669 million in line with our conservative liquidity management approach as we built up cash position ahead of the upcoming debt maturities in the second half of the year and ahead of the expected payment of dividend in May. Consequently, and in 2017, we are expecting to run a higher average cash balance with the SNB, which will lead to higher SNB charges. Net financing receivable grew slightly by 10 million, mainly due to continued strong growth in the credit card business, 15%, which was partially offset by 3.6% reductions of the personal loan portfolio, in line with the market trend. Auto business held up well in a normalizing market following the removal or resetting with insight of the Euro-Swiss francs exchange rate peg in 2015, which drove up demand for new vehicles. On the liability side, non-GE funding increased circa 1.5% as we attracted stable funding, stable retail deposit plus 15% growth year-on-year, and partially replaced the GE facility by issuing an unsecured bond at an attractive coupon. Further details on the funding will be provided in the next slide. Finally, the increase in shareholders' equities of circa 49 million was in line with the built-up of net income of 143.7 million and the 2015 dividend payout of 94.5 million. Moving on to the funding section, and as I highlighted earlier, 2016 funding balances were slightly up compared to 2015 at just under 3.9 billion, with a 66 pips funding cost at your end. Key changes compared to 2015. Number one, the outstanding GE facility of 250 million was fully repaid 2 years ahead of schedules and partly replaced by the non-secured bond of 200 million with a 7-year maturity and an 18 pips coupon. Our retail deposit franchise grew by over circa 130 million as we continue to attract stable funding sources. Additionally, the maturing auto ABS was successfully refinanced with an attractive coupon of 22 bips compared to 57 bips and for a longer duration, 3.75 years compared to 3 years previously. Undrawn credit lines were opportunistically reduced from 0.5 billion to 300 million as we further optimize the bank's liquidity sources. Consequently, we significantly reduced our cost of funds from 82 bips to 62 bips, but also increased the average remaining duration of the portfolio by 3 months from 2.4 years to 2.7 years and reached an adequate mix of funding sources at this point in time. Going forward, we expect the cost of funds to remain fairly flat in 2017, assuming, of course, no changes to the current interest rate environment and to the funding mix. With that, I hand over to Volker for the update on risk.
Yeah, thanks, Remy. Yes, as we already saw on the P&L, we report for the year 2016 a loss provision of 44.6 million. This translates into a loss rate of 1.1%, which is on the same level as in 2015. It is also in line with our expectations and in line with the guidance that we gave in the beginning of 2016. The underlying asset quality measured by 30-plus delinquencies is also very stable and with 1.8% on exactly the same level as the year before. The same is true for the NPL ratio, where we again can report a value of 0.4% for the end of the year. Also, the split by product, which you can see on the right part of the slide, evidences the stability. Year-end values for the asset quality metrics are across all product lines on exactly the same levels as the year before and generally stable over a longer term as well. This might reflect both the current macro environment but also the fact that the risk appetite of the bank hasn't materially changed and loss mitigation processes are consistently well performing. Based on the stability that we've seen, we would also expect for 2017 a loss performance that is in line with what we have observed in prior years. And with that, we take a look at the capital position and hand it back to Robert.
Thank you, Volker. Yeah, I think this is probably one of the things that interests you a little bit. We redefined the capital policy addressing excess capital,
I think you guys were waiting a bit for this. So Cembra Money Bank intends to return excess Tier 1 capital above 20% to shareholders, either via extraordinary dividends or share buybacks, or unless there is a more efficient allocation of capital, in particular internal and external growth. That means that we returning capital, so we have a ordinary dividend of 3.45 and an additional extraordinary dividend of one franc per share. We will propose this to the AGM, and then we still remain in a firepower to work on growth, external growth, if we need that. Excess capital stands at 76 million at the end of 16. And you see basically basic earnings per share of 5.10 versus 5.04 in 15. The ordinary dividend per share is 3.45 and 3.35 in 15. Payout ratio of 68%, and then in addition to this, an extraordinary dividend per share of 1 franc. Moving to the outlook and guidance for 17 on the next page, I think the medium-term targets are not changed, so we still have net consumer loan growth to be moderate in line with Swiss GDP growth. I think we should probably add somewhere this year, not only asset growth, but also fee growth or revenue growth, because I think that's the piece where we're growing a lot. But still, the 0.2% was not completely Swiss GDP, but there was some growth. I think on profitability, capitalization, and dividend payout, completely in line with what we have been performing previous years, 17.4% ROE, 20% Tier 1, and a 68% payout ratio for 16. If you're looking at 17 a bit ahead, the interest income will go down. I mean, we cannot change that. The introduction of the rate cap since the 1st of July 2016 will drive interest income on personal loans down. We see continued growth in credit cards. The new card generation from mid-17 with Migros will probably have a positive impact on revenues as well. We will remain very disciplined on costs. So we're trying to invest more in digitalization. The cost-income ratio might get up a little bit up or not, but it will be more or less in line with what we have been performing over the last couple of years. So what you see probably is at least that's the expectation in the normal market circumstances, is an EPS in the range of 470 to 5 and losses in line with prior year's performance. So a bit lower probably than 16, because this has all to do with the rate cap and the personal loan business, but still very stable. And we're looking ahead to a stable year in a challenging environment. And with that, now we're opening it up for questions.
The first question is from Martin Amis from UBS. Please go ahead.
And thank you for taking my questions. I have three questions. First of all, on costs, if you could just comment on whether we should expect any further branch closures or you feel comfortable with the current branch network, if we should actually see any cost savings coming through from the branch closures that you completed in the second half of last year. So I'm referring to an annualization effect, if any. Still on costs, you flagged that you plan further investments into digitalization. Can you give us more color on that? How should we think about it in terms of additional burden on cost line? Second question on capital. I think now your capital return strategy or policy is very clear. To me, the only question left is, the new return policy refers to the excess above 20%. How should we think of the 18% target for CET1 in this context? And third question, if you could just give us some color on market dynamics or market behavior in the personal loans market, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mate. A lot of questions, but I'll try to answer them in line. I think they're basically all for me. So I'll take first the cost one. Branch closures. We closed 7 branches from 25 to 18. I think this is a bit it. No, I think we need a branch network which is
probably somewhere between 15 and 20. There's nothing in the pipeline to close more. We might close one or open one somewhere, but I think the level of branches and the number of branches is probably where we want it to be. So you shouldn't expect anything specific in 17 or more on branches. It's leading to cost savings. So you'll see, if you look at the headcount, for example, you see the headcount is completely flat. So we're taking some cost out. And I think you should look at the cost saving also in combination with the digitalization. We added 11% of customers to the bank in 2016 with 10 people less, basically. So our headcount went from 715 to 705, where you add about 70,000 customers. So I think there's not a big bang, but there's a constant investment in digitalization. One good example is the new auto system we launched in 16, where dealers can go online and do basically a lot of printing, portfolio management, and themselves online. So we're shifting the people from the auto business to the cars business. And I think that's a optimization that you will see continue to see. I think it also allows us to maintain our cost-to-income ratio relatively stable. On the capital side, the 18%, what's your second question? The 18% is not really going to change. I think we haven't changed our view on growth. So if we have opportunistically can find external growth, we will do it, and we need some capital for it. So I think we want to maintain the flexibility to with some capital to do that. That's why we don't return more than 20% back today. I think on the other hand, we're trying to find a good balance there. So I don't think we need more than 20% tier one. So we're returning up to 20%, and we still have some flexibility for potential acquisitions there. So the 18% at the target stays, and basically you can see the extra capital there as a, you know, potential. If we see something that works, we would execute on it. Market behavior, especially on the personal loan side, I think the market has gone down in 16 and will continue to go down a bit in 17 because there's a certain group of people that don't qualify anymore for personal loans. So you have to go somewhere else because everybody's doing risk-based pricing. So there are basically two behaviors. One is that people are cautious, like always, which already led to a decline in the personal loan market in the last couple of years. Plus, now, additionally, after the rate cap, you have some people that don't qualify anymore. So I can't give you a number, but you know, over the last couple of years, 2 to 4% decline in the market was normal. We expect that to continue. We are competitive on the direct side, so the brand side, because we have now a rate that is below 10%. We still have a very strong network there. We still have a very good service offering there. So I think we'll remain competitive there. We're not paying huge commissions on very low rates, so we don't do that. So, and some of our competitors do. So you probably will see that we continue to lose a bit of volume to agents, but, you know, we're defending our market share pretty well there. And I think if you look at the market share last year, it was about between 36 and 37 still, and I would assume it will remain a bit stable there.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Mr. Ian Schutz from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Many thanks for the presentation and taking my questions. I have a bunch of them. Follow-up on the personal loans market. What is your expectation on the back of closing some branches if you were to, you know, ignore for a moment the impact from the maximum allowed interest rate reduction? And then a couple of questions on the credit cards, please. You also hinted at the further reduction in the interchange fee coming summer 2017. What is your expected impact here? Second question on the credit card. You also hinted at the new generation of credit cards. You also said you were not going to provide more information, but could you maybe provide a bit more color what you mean with a new generation, sense of like whether there's certain changes we should be aware of? And then lastly, on credit cards, the partnership with Fnac. How many cards do you have now? And when you say it's similar or it could become similar to Conforama, how many credit cards does Conforama have at the moment? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jan. First, on the personal loan side, I think, as a fact, people are going to look more and more online for
personal loan. So it, where we had 5 years or 6 years ago, a person walking to a branch says, I need a loan, that doesn't happen anymore. So the branches are more service centers for people than generation centers. So the generation of leads is going to be all through internet, and people go to the tablet. So I think that's where we're spending the money. That's where we spend the marketing, more and more online. That's where people go. So one of the reasons to close for branches is not only the rate cap, right? There's some cost saving in there, but it's also that the branches are changing a bit to service centers. So I think we need those 17, 18 branches as service centers to service customers, because we like to have a customer once a year in a branch to talk to him and to cross sell, upsell, and all, do fraud prevention, all the things. But I think the online is getting more and more important. So I think that's how we see branches. I think, you know, 15 to 20 branches is probably the right size for us. Everybody should be able in 1 hour to reach a branch in Switzerland. That's still the case. On the card side, the reduction of interchange, we always said, you know, the reduction of interchange is not going to be material on the income, and we still stand by that statement. The reduction of interchange is only on the domestic interchange, which is outside Migros. So the Migros revenue is not affected by there. So it's for us, it's limited. It's more limited probably than for some of our competitors. So I think one of the reasons that we changed the Migros contract was to anticipate on the reduction of interchange. So there will be some changes in there. Unfortunately, and I know you're trying, but unfortunately, we're not going to give you any details on the Migros contract right now, because that will be agreed with Migros, and that will be said also in the statement when we renew the contract. So I really, you know, I can't really comment on new generation. I think you have to wait till mid of the year. Also, I think competition would love to know what new generation would mean at the moment, but we don't do that. So I'm very sorry about this one. On the Fnac side, Conforama has 25,000 cards, something like this, 25,000 cards. I think if you look at Fnac is smaller than Conforama, but they have about 200,000 loyal card holders. So if you get to a 10, 15%, 20% penetration, over time, my expectation would be it would come to the same number of cards. It's early days, so we just launched in November, so now you wouldn't expect 20,000 cards in year one, but I think over 3-4 years you would expect that, and the strategy of the bank is to have more of Fnacs, you know, connected to us. So I think the question is not only how many cards can get Fnac this year. The question is more is how many of these customers can you sign on in the next 2 years, because I would love to sign on a few of those kind of customers and leverage the Conforama and Fnac model to more customers, because 10 times 20,000 is also 200,000. So and I'm not saying you get 200,000 here, but that's the strategy to get more. Hopefully, I haven't answered all your questions, John, but hopefully, you know, still got...
I would have more. If I may, on Swiss billing...
Yes, go ahead.
Can you please provide a bit more quantitative input? How many retail customers does Swiss Billing serve, or how many did they serve last year, and how large is the loan book we are speaking of here?
Very good questions. The question always with Swiss Billing is, I mean, is a customer that once paid an invoice after 3 days, 2 years ago, or is a customer someone who repeatedly pays an invoice? I think that's a big change. I think the loan book is very small. It's a very small company. What I love in the company is they have a very good technology, and I think today they don't give any loans out because they don't have the funding for this now. What they normally do is people buy online, and then they have 30 days to pay. And they pay the retailer on day one or two or three, whatever they agree with the retailer, and then the customer pays after 30 days. They don't really revolve that customer because they don't have the funding today to do that. One of the reasons that they were willing to sell the business to us, because we can give them the funding and we can give them the opportunity to revolve there, and I think that's an opportunity. The other thing is they already have a cash flow issue because they had to pay the retailer on day one, and the customer pays on day 30. So if you really grow the business quickly, you have a funding issue there. So I think that's where we come in. I think also it could be a factory to develop new products for us, much easier than we do it. They have a very good system, they have very good technology. And the third thing is we can go to a retailer and we cannot say only you can do a card or we can do a plug-in of a personal loan. No, you can also have a invoice solution for your customer. So I think We could also see it as an acquisition tool to get to retailers and then later come up with the card product or a different product. So it closes our product offering to merchants very well. It's still a very small company, about 12, 15 people in there. I think this year we tried to staff it better, you know, and we're trying to put more sales in there. It's going to be, don't expect a big thing this year for it, but I think, you know, over time it could be very interesting for us because it really fits into the strategy and it gives us access to retailers on a different level than we have today. So I would say it's a small diamond that we need to make a big diamond.
Thanks.
The next question is from Mr. David Hart from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning all. So I've got three questions. I mean, the first one is in regards to the business mix. You've previously highlighted a way to mitigate some of the revenue losses from the personal loans is to try and sell more credit cards. Can you shed a bit of color on how that's developed and what the client activity is in that front in terms of moving from the personal loans towards credit cards? And it kind of leads on to my second question in regards to the credit cards being a driver going forward. And we know that the interest rate cap or maximum cap is at the 12% mark. You're charging shy of 10% at the moment. Are there any room to improve that? How do you see that going forward? Do you see that increasing, whether it's with your own Temra Money Bank credit cards or with a Amigo partnership that you currently have? And thirdly, maybe just to shed a bit more light on the cost-income guidance. Are you expecting that to rise going forward? What can we expect as the key drivers as to that? Is it more still on the IT cost aspect and also the pension? Will these two be the key drivers in terms of the slight increase in cost-income ratio?
All right. Thank you, David. I'm trying to answer them all. On the cars, I think your question one and two is a bit related to each other. What we're trying to do is provide more customers with the cards and a personal loan at the same time. Also, we're trying to have more cards customers provided with a personal loan because if you are a regular revolver, you know, it wasn't very attractive in the past to take a personal loan, but with the new rate cap at 9.99 or 9.5 or whatever rate you charge and the 12% on the card, it could be for a customer interested to take a loan. So I think we're trying to move on both sides. First of all, people in Cembra customers in branches, if you have a personal loan, we try to additionally sell a card because in the card we can charge 12%, on the loan we can charge 10%. So that gives a higher yield. Also, we are probably one of the few in the market who can offer a card and a loan combined, so it's also a strong value proposition. On the other hand, you know, if you have regular revolvers on the card, you try to provide them with a loan because you give them more flexibility as well, because they can just spend the card, use the card for other spending. But I think that is what we're trying to do, both on the branches and both with our retailers, to combine those two products more and more. I also think that over time, you won't talk about a personal loan anymore, but you would talk about a consumer loan, which could be a piece of a card and could be a piece in a loan. I hope that answers your question more or less in that perspective. On the cost-income ratio, look, we're not guiding with cost-income ratios. If you look at the past, you know, there has always been around 41, 42, 43%. That has been, you know, our cost-income ratio. I think we like to have a cost-income ratio between 40 and 45 somewhere. That's at least the goal. I cannot exactly tell you where we're going to be. I think what we're also trying to do is keep the number of people flat in the business, so you have to digitalize the business more and more, step by step. On the pension side, I mean, Remy, we don't expect any more headwind on the pension side.
Not for 2017.
So that's going to be quite stable. I think if you look at the IT cost, you basically have a run rate. So it's not going to change a lot. But we will still make some small investments there. But that, you know, it should be covered by higher income as well. So I think cost income ratio, look, I'm not guiding you with a number here, but 42, 43, 44, that area, you should be okay.
Just a follow-up question. It was in regards to the credit cards I was creating beforehand. I mean, the max rate is at the 12%. At the moment, it's 9.9. Do you envisage increasing that going forward? Is there room, or is anywhere in the contracts which stipulate you can increase the interest rate?
I mean, it's now by the KKG defined. So what they do is they take once a year, they take the 3 months LIBOR, and they do a spread with a floor of zero, and they put a spread of 10% for loans and 12% for cards. So that, so we can only increase when the LIBOR goes up. Well, the LIBOR goes up, probably your funding cost goes up as well. So we are at the max there, and I don't think we can do anything there. It's just now decided by law. I think the only good news on the rate cap is that, you know, there's a correlation now with the funding cost probably and the rate you can charge. So if funding rates really go up in the future, you can reprice. I think that's the good news on this one.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question comes from Mr. Andreas Brun from Mirabaud. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you. Most of the questions have been answered. Just two add-ons. Just to understand, can you tell us why the new credit card generation will have a positive revenue impact, or is that a question going too far? And on page 17, you mentioned partnerships and joint ventures. What is it all about there?
Thank you. Okay. Good questions, Andreas, as always. Just on the credit cards, look, I think with what you see in the market is when the interchange is coming down, competition is going to put more fees out. They have to compensate. So we see already some of our competitors increasing annual fees. We see already more fees coming into the market. I think the great value proposition for the micro card is the zero annual fee that will remain. I can give you that secret already for the new generation. So I think the card is very competitive. It's a very strong value proposition. So I don't think we have reached our growth potential on the micro card. And I think if you look at the every generation, we're getting closer and closer to the Cumulus brand. So we started as a budget card, and now we're completely integrated with Cumulus. I think the value proposition for Cumulus is so very strong that I think if we can reach all those customers. I'll give you an example. We just did a mailing with Migro to customers who use the Cumulus card a lot but didn't have a credit card. Great results. So I think there's still a lot of room to improve, and I think the growth is not from that portfolio. So in general, I think the credit card growth can continue. I don't see, you know, we had 11% cards growth last year. I don't know what's going to be this year, but it's going to be good. You know? On the partnerships, JVs, I think in general, if I can find somebody who is really interested to come to Switzerland with a great value proposition, we could do a partnership with a JV. You know? Switzerland is normally not the country where people immediately go. Normally people go to Germany, they go to the UK, they go to France. No, Switzerland is not the most interesting market. If we can't find something ourselves in Switzerland, we could maybe invite somebody outside Switzerland who has a great value proposition to do a joint venture with us in Switzerland. And that could be a lot of things. It needs to get scale, and needs to get size. And I think that's where we're looking at. So, I mean, if you look at the M&A side, if you can buy something in Switzerland what fits into the strategy, like a Swiss billing or like something else, we would do it tomorrow. But you can also imagine that you try to find somebody who wants to get a footprint in Switzerland, who has a very strong product outside Switzerland. We have a customer base of over 700,000 people, so we could maybe do a joint venture there. But that's a bit of the color that we're looking at. Hopefully that answers your question, Andreas.
Yes, thank you very much.
The next question is from Mrs. Flora Benacoun from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I have only two left. The first is regarding the funding sources, because it seems that you have lost a little bit of your institutional deposits. So what I wanted to ask you on this is that obviously, you know, as sovereign debt yields are starting to move a bit higher, maybe you could lose some more as your pricing may get less competitive versus especially the Swiss yields. So I wanted to know a little bit more regarding these institutional deposits. How much is with a fixed term? At what average rate did you do them? And whether you think you could continue to lose some in the next few quarters and years. The second question I had was just regarding the 1.8 million of treasury shares. You say in the slide pack that they are to be kept until further notice. So just wanted to better understand the possibilities you have here and your thinking. Thank you.
Good, Flora. I haven't spoken to you for a while, so good to have you on the phone. Amy, you want to do the funding question? I'll do the treasury shares afterwards.
Okay, sure. Thank you. So in terms of funding sources and especially looking at the institutional bucket, I mean, you're right, it has reduced between 15 and 16. There was a clear focus on the retail side between those two periods. Now, if you look at the overall mix, we are pretty. We think it's pretty adequate based on current market environment, and we are also actually putting a little bit more focus on the institutionals because we see the institutional as there is more appetite to go further down or further up the curve, and we could see them as a substitute for some of the committed line we have, for example. So to answer your question, yes, there's been a reduction between 15 and 16. That was a conscious decision to prioritize the retail side. But now looking ahead and looking at the overall appetite from the funding sources, we see the institutional as quite an opportunity either to stabilize or to grow further.
I've been doing institutional funding. We've been doing institutional funding since 2010, basically. And what you see is, in the beginning, everybody wanted to commit for 12 or 18 months. I think now we're coming to a stage with the long-term low interest rates that people even want to commit for 3 or 5 years. There it gets interesting to replace some of your bank lines by institutionals. Because we always said, you know, as long as it's 12 to 18 months, we don't need to be too dependent on institutionals. But now you see pension funds, they want to basically put money away for 5 or 6 years. Well, then you almost come to a bond. And I think that's what's getting interesting. The bond itself is quite cheap, but the bank lines are sometimes still a bit expensive. So we're basically comparing what do you do with a 3-year bank line or with a 3 or 4 year or maybe a 5 year institutional. And I think that's the reason why you can see institutional maybe increasing a bit this year, depending on the market developments. On the treasury shares, I think there's no need to cancel them right now. We have 3 to 4 years, and they have to be canceled by the AGM before you get tax applications. They are now 2 years old, so we have another year, and we don't see any pressure to cancel them right now. That's the reason that we keep them. I think we have 3 or 4 years before we get some tax applications there, so we have another year to think about it and sit on it. But there's nothing behind this, no direct willingness or plan to use them on the short term.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mr. Tariq El Mejad from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Just two questions, please. First of all, on the branches numbers, I mean, you mentioned that they're becoming more as service centers, and hence, I mean, the whole world is moving to a full digital. Someone who wants to go digital, ask for a loan on digital, why would bother to go and try 1 hour to go to a branch to sort out an issue? So do you think, like, eventually in the midterm, your model would move full digital or, like, just as you do for autos, big service centers and not necessarily 18, 19 branches? So that's my first question. And secondly, just on the capital return new guidance, what's the difference between the previous guidance? Because you're already saying before 18% is our minimum, and that's already a big buffer to the minimum requirements. And whatever is above will return or basically grow if possible. So would that mean basically you are already at 20% now? That means you'll be paying 100% payouts, if I understand, right? And then if there's any big M&A, then you'll drop below 20? Or I don't understand really what's different than before and what's this new guidance. Thank you.
Hi, Derek. I'll try to answer both of your questions. So on the branch side, I mean, you're right. People are getting more digital. I think we still pay out a big piece of our loans in branches. So people are getting cash out of branches. We also like to get people in a branch once a year because you can upsell and cross-sell face-to-face much easier than only online. Still, identification is 99% in Switzerland done face-to-face. You can do digital, but people are not using it a lot.
So I think if that becomes completely standard, digital identification, we probably get even a bit less branch visits. But today it's very interesting to go to a branch because with one visit you can identify yourself. There's still a little paperwork that has to be delivered. We can detect fraud much easier when we look people in their eyes in a branch than we do it online. So we see a lot of value to go to a branch, and a customer will go to a branch as long as he has to do a lot of documentation and identification for a loan. I don't see the law changing in Switzerland on the short term, so I don't think that will change for us on the short term either. If the law changes completely in 5 years' time, but you don't have to do anything anymore and you can just get a loan, probably the use of branches is getting to be less, but I haven't seen that trend so far. On the capital returns, what we're trying to do is there was always a verbal discussion that we not intending to have more than 20% capital in the bank. We have formalized it. So we have now formalized in a policy that we want to return excess capital over 20%. So I think if you look at the models of a lot of people, though, I mean, they were spent up to 25% tier one because people didn't know what to do with it. I think with formalizing it, and you're right, you know, if there's nothing happening, you're going to get to 100% payout. I know, that's clear. I think it's formalizing what we have been saying. I think it gives you a lot of clarity to the market, and people at least know now formally what to expect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Derek.
Gentlemen, that was the last question.
Okay, thank you very much. I think a lively results presentation. As always, we almost took the full hour. Thank you for all your attention, and I hope to see all of you soon, and hopefully we have another strong year ahead of us for Cembra. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call, and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.